Good morning, everyone. I will call to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. First order of business is approval of the minutes. And we have, oh, and a quorum is present. Yes, thank you. We have a set of minutes. So we have minutes from March 23rd, 24th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. So since we're approving five sets of minutes, I'd like to give members a moment to take a look at them. I know it's quite a bit, but I want to get these approved. They are all in your packets, and we're emailed out as well.
Madam Chair, I'm ready to make the motion when you are.
Oh, okay. I actually, Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of March 23rd, 24th, March 28th, March 29th, and March 30th.
Okay. Do members need another moment to look at these? Because there are so many. All right. Is there any discussion to the minutes? The motion is to approve minutes of March 23rd, 24th, 28th, 29th, and March 30th. All right. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay. So we are here to hear House File 402. Representative Bierman. So as Representative Bierman comes up to the table, his motion would be to, just for a little explanation, we heard House File 402 on April 4th, and we approved a motion to re-refer it to Ways and Means, but we actually kept possession of the bill because I never signed the conference report to actually officially move it. So it's still before our committee. So Representative Bierman's motion will be to reconsider the motion to re-refer House File 402 as amended to Ways and Means. So that is the motion, to reconsider that original motion that we approved. So all in favor of the reconsideration of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and that motion is reconsidered. So the bill is back before us. And then the motion, Representative Bierman's motion, is going to be that House File 402 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So we're making the same motion, but we have before us the DE5 amendment. And so Representative Bierman is going to move to adoption of the DE5 amendment. And so with that, with the DE5 amendment before us, I'm going to turn to Representative Bierman to explain the DE5 and to the changes from the bill as it was previously intended to leave this committee. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's just a few changes that have been made since the last stop. One was in Section 2, which is now coded in a new chapter, 145D. That was a recommendation from the AG's office, believing that that would be a better fit than what it was previously in 62J. There's also on line 9.1, a new clause was added to the list of factors informing whether a transaction is in the public interest. And another subdivision clarification, we created a change in that subdivision on data classification to put all of it into one area. So that would be subdivision 5. And then finally, new section number 3 was replaced, the prior section on the return of charitable assets. It just confirms more of a general and a specific quantification of those terms for those types of entities. And that would be it for the changes.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bierman. So with that, is there any discussion to the DE5? So my intention is that we would adopt it, and then we have testimony on the bill as amended. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just
I'm trying to understand why the on 9-1 that change was meant, because if you've got two entities, and oftentimes this happens because one entity is hemorrhaging funds and is in risk of going under, so that maybe some of the content of 9-1 through 3 is part of the reason why a certain entity was hemorrhaging and going under. So I'm wondering why you're adding that in your DE.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Quam. I'm adding that because labor and unions that have been effective in helping build our country since the beginning, this is just another factor that should be at least considered. It's not necessarily a showstopper. None of them are. But these are factors to be considered. And so that is a pertinent factor in some cases, and would not be something that by itself would be used to change a deal, most likely, but it's something that we should have some consideration on.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bierman. And you and I had a conversation about potential cost increases if a merger does go through. But I don't see that you added any language to consider potential cost increases or negative impacts if a merger does not go through. Has that been added anywhere? Are we considering the effects of not doing the merger yet? I know we've brought this up before.
Sure. Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, Representative New, the consideration of whether this merger would not go through, I mean, this bill is, you know, one piece of a bigger picture. When we focus in on just the specifics of Sanford and Fairview, there are many issues to be addressed, which are, you know, going to be done at a different level than this this area. That's going to be something that the Attorney General's office is looking at now. So by itself, you know, as a separate issue, some of those things have to be resolved, and this bill is not, we don't have a solution to that if a hospital system is going under and what the options would be. That's really going to be dependent upon the case-by-case basis.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Or Madam Chair, I gave you a promotion. I don't know, maybe that's not a promotion.
Not the first time.
So I understand that you're saying that that's not part of this bill, but it does still need to be considered. I'm just wondering, you're talking about the bigger picture, but I don't know that we have a sense of what the bigger picture is. We know that the AG's office already has some authority here to oversee these mergers, but we keep hearing about the bigger picture, and this is just one piece. Am I missing something? Are there other pieces to address this moving through the legislature right now?
Representative New Brindley, what do you mean other pieces? Could you clarify, like?
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, what I mean is, when I ask the question, you know, will this consider potential effects of not going through with a merger? I'm told that no, this does not address that specifically, but that this legislation is part of sort of the bigger picture that they're. So what I'm asking is, are there other pieces that I'm missing that are moving that would address those things? What is that bigger picture? Because right now, I'm aware that the Attorney General's office already has oversight over these mergers. And so I'm wondering what that bigger picture would be and where we would get that consideration.
And just to bring this back, you know, we're here to discuss the changes in this DE and not to kind of rehear the entire bill, which has been before this committee, what, twice already at least, I think? Three times. So, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill addresses some of the issues around mergers and acquisitions, fundamentally. And so the current situation in front of us, which the Attorney General's office is working on, you know, there's a lot of unknowns how that's going to play out. There's a few different scenarios that could come to pass. You know, and so I'm not here to comment directly on that specific situation because I don't have all the information that is pertinent and being considered, and I'm not an expert on that type of litigation. But I do know that what my bill is addressing is the immediate issue of the University of Minnesota being entwined in that. It is addressing the issue of mergers and acquisitions, which are happening across the country at an accelerating rate. And the more I look into that across the country, the more concerned I am that we in this state, and as we have talked in this committee before in years past that I've been here, is how do we as policymakers gauge and work on health policy in this committee specifically without having the insight of what is coming on the market. We have, you know, various things that we do as a legislature, the bed moratorium being one, which is, I think, over 40 years that's been in place. And that's another issue that we are going to have to address in the future as far as what our infrastructure looks like. And that's what this bill is beginning to take a look at and to have some access to understand those mergers, how they affect access, quality, and price, and the public interest. And these consolidations need a hard look because they do affect the entire state, rural and urban, and we just need to have more information on it, and that's the point of the bill.
Okay, I'm going to call on Representative Murphy, but I would like to focus on the changes in this DE, and because we have a distinguished testifier under who I would like to get to. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, mine is subsection 591, line 91. But just to go to subsection 5, it talks about the Attorney General has the action to either enjoin or unwind transactions if it's contrary to public interest. So we're giving the Attorney General all this power, and then we're saying on 9-1 that he has power over all collective bargaining units and all collective bargaining agreements. So it ends up having a lot of power that's given to the Attorney General. So I just wondered how that was, when you developed it, what you thought that was going to entail.
Thank you.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Murphy, for the good question. So going back to Subdivision 5, the ability of the Attorney General to unwind a transaction, presently, as I understand it, there is some power to do that now if there's a malfeasance that has been proven. There, in this particular bill, we put this in there to make sure that if indeed a transaction went through the process of the 90 days and it was determined later that the transaction was not played out the way it was supposed to, that the Attorney General could have some ability to step in on that. But I think the important thing is to remember that with a 90-day look in this review process, the notice and review, both by the Minnesota Department of Health and the Attorney General, both looking at this and having that opportunity, I think most transactions are going to get an all clear and will proceed. I think that this unwinding a transaction, as the Attorney General has said before when she's testified in front of us, that would be extremely rare. And they also would then, after years, take into account the public interest of unwinding a transaction and what that would do. It would be probably more problematic, and so I think it would be a rarely used case, but we do have to put it in statute as something that there is some ability to go back if there's malfeasance going on or that a transaction spun out of a different way.
Representative Bierman, that was in the bill before. Am I correct?
That was in the bill before.
All right.
Your other point then, sorry, Madam Chair, but the other point was 9.1 on the labor side. So what it does is it puts that issue, 9.1 just states that collective bargaining units and those situations to any particular merger should at least be considered. So it's one of those points that will be considered. It is not necessarily the point, and You have another question?
Yeah, right. Just and as it can.
Representative Murphy.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. It just says that he can enjoin also a collective bargaining agreement now. So he actually can decide the taxpayer's role in the way that it's written here.
Representative Murphy, where does it say that?
Oh, I'm just saying that it talks about collective bargaining and collective bargaining agreements, and that the Attorney General, pardon? Oh, 9.1, I'm sorry.
Well, okay. So, Representative Murphy, it doesn't say that. But,
right, Madam Chair, it says factors.
Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, factors informing whether a transaction is contrary to the public interest include but are not limited to whether the transaction will have a negative impact on wages, collective bargaining units, collective bargaining units of existing or future workers. But it doesn't say you enjoin years later over that issue.
Representative Perryman.
Very brief, I am on this, and that is just the question again of the open appropriations for the fiscal note.
Okay, well, that is, again, not changing in this DE, and we can discuss that after we adopt the DE-5. So, again, Representative Bierman is renewing his motion to adopt the DE-5 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the DE-5 is adopted. Okay, let us now go to Representative Bierman. Did you want to make any more introductory remarks to just to the change part?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any more introductory remarks regarding the changes, but I did just want to maybe set the table a little bit for our next speaker.
Please.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, members, House File 402 is designed to do two things: protect public assets and promote better public health. The bill encompasses the three main issues you've heard before: the return of the charitable assets in certain circumstances, how the legislature can address the growing impact of mergers and acquisitions of healthcare entities on public interest and public health, and number three, the issue of the health maintenance organization conversions from nonprofit status to for-profit. All of these issues have been discussed in some form over the previous years that I've been on this committee. All are far more important this term. The moratorium on conversions expires July 1st. We have billions of dollars on the line. Mergers and acquisitions continue at an accelerating pace across the country to impact cost, quality, and healthcare access, especially in rural and underserved urban settings. And then there is our university medical school. Members, the initial reason for House File 402 was because of bipartisan concerns related to the merger between Fairview Health Services and South Dakota-based Sanford Health, and that these two systems didn't consult Fairview's joint clinical partner, the University of Minnesota, about how this merger would impact Minnesota's academic health system. This is a very important issue, as Minnesota's only land-grant institution, the U and all its assets, are legally and morally obligated to the benefit of our state and our citizens. Charitable, philanthropic, and taxpayer dollars built a world-class academic health system, and I believe strongly, just as former Governor Tim Pawlenty said in a Senate hearing in March, there is no precedent for an out-of-state entity to control or own a state's academic medical center. No precedent. The mission of the continuum of medical care and treatment, teaching and research at the University of Minnesota is our charge to preserve for the citizens of this state. Minnesota is known throughout the world for healthcare, and central to that is a top-notch medical school. The U's medical school trains over 70% of Minnesota's physicians. Through other health science programs, the U also trains over 70% of other professionals, such as dentists, nurses, pharmacists, and a variety of other mid-level professionals who are critical to healthcare delivery in our state. Under the current dean, Dr. Jacob Tolar, the medical school recently jumped 9 slots to the 8th-ranked public medical school in the country. The ranking is a major achievement, and it is the school's highest ranking in over 25 years. Among all medical schools vying for the highly competitive NIH funding, The U of M is now ranked 21st. What this means is that our medical school will continue to be a magnet for strong physician scientists that will enhance our ability to deliver new cures, treatments, and care models for Minnesotans while preparing the next generation to serve communities across our state. Research that comes out of the U of M has major impacts on public policy decisions we make as lawmakers in many areas of state government. The university is one of the largest producers of medical and public research in the world, and the direct care medical impact of our university reaches every county of our state. I firmly believe that the status of the U is one of the biggest issues we are facing this session because of the long-term consequences. Out-of-state control of our academic medical center will be detrimental to recruitment and retention of top healthcare talent. I am proud to work with the University of Minnesota and proud to have former Governor Mark Dayton here today to testify on this important part of the bill. So, Madam Chair, if we could, let's hear from our former governor.
Thank you.
And then we can move on.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Welcome to the committee, Governor Dayton.
Madam Chair, it takes 5 years after you leave to be recognized as a distinguished guest, so thank you. And Representative Bierman, thank you for your kind introduction, also for your leadership on this vitally important issue. I regret that Governor Tim Pawlenty is out of town and unable to join me today, as he did when we testified together before a Senate committee. It's not often that two former governors from different parties work together to advocate for an issue, but the prospect of an out-of-state entity owning and controlling key parts of the University of Minnesota Medical Center deeply concerns us both. We're also worried that this issue has not been receiving the priority it needs in your current session. I'm here today to ask for your help to change that, and I cannot overstate, as Representative Bierman just articulated very well, I cannot overstate the extreme importance of your actions, not only upon the university's medical school, but also on the future quality of medical services throughout our state. As you know, access to the best possible medical care is the most priceless asset we can offer to the people of Minnesota. Yet the proposed merger between the university's clinical partner, Fairview Health Services, and South Dakota-based Sanford Health will result in Sanford owning and controlling the U's flagship healthcare facilities. This cannot be allowed to happen. Minnesota is a national and global leader in healthcare excellence, innovation, and quality. We're home to the Mayo Clinic, many other superb healthcare providers, a robust medical device and therapy industry, researchers and innovators who create and advance life-saving healthcare improvements, and a world-class healthcare workforce that is the key to it all. Not much of this happens without the U playing its historic and strategic leadership role. Founded in 1888, the University of Minnesota Medical School draws on 135 years of experience in improving medicine through education, scientific discovery, and providing patients innovative and compassionate care. The U's Medical School, as Representative Bierman stated, trains 70% of Minnesota's physicians. Through other health science programs, the U also trains 70% of other healthcare professionals, such as dentists, nurses, pharmacists, and a wide variety of mid-level professionals who are critical to healthcare delivery in our state. As I said before, quality medical care throughout Minnesota is the number one benefit we get from living in this state. Yet when I, as governor, proposed funding increases and a new building for the University of Minnesota's Medical Center, I discovered that many legislators were surprisingly unaware or unconvinced of the medical school's paramount importance. just look at the benefits it and our state's other health care providers provide. Their doctors and nurses and other medical personnel work and live in communities large and small throughout Minnesota and add immeasurably to their social fabric. The institutions who employ them boost those local economies with their payroll dollars and other expenditures. And how can you measure the relief to a spouse or parent whose loved one has a medical emergency and can receive top quality care just moments later? Additionally, this medical expertise drives innovations, inventions, and services that have spawned hundreds of healthcare businesses in Minnesota, which have in turn brought thousands of other highly qualified women and men to our state. Principal contributors to these enormous benefits are the Universities of Minnesota's medical and nursing schools and other health programs, which each year attract best quality students who graduate as well-trained professionals, most of whom remain in Minnesota, and provide top-level healthcare services to all the rest of us. The U of Minnesota Medical School recently jumped, as the representative said, 9 slots to the 8th ranked public medical school in the country. The ranking is a major achievement, and it's the school's highest ranking in over 25 years. But even 9th best is not good enough. Our shared goal must be to help elevate the medical school to the top 5 in the country. That will position the U to continue to be a magnet for leading physicians and scientists who aspire to deliver new cures, treatments, and care models for Minnesotans, while also training the next generation of doctors and other healthcare professionals who will provide care in communities throughout Minnesota. As Minnesota's only land-grant institution, the U and all of its assets are legally and morally obligated to the benefit of our state and our citizens. They should be solely governed and directed and funded by the Board of Regents and this legislature. To allow any other arrangement would be a terrible betrayal of the trust bestowed by the people of Minnesota. It would be catastrophic if the university's medical school or its hospitals were controlled by an out-of-state entity. So I'm asking you to pass legislation that would prevent that from happening. I respectfully urge you to enact Section 3, Subdivision 2 of Representative Bierman's House File 402 that would protect them for the university and for the people of Minnesota. So that when we take ourselves, our loved ones, in for life-saving medical treatments, we can be assured that we will all be in the hands of the very best professionals anywhere in the country. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Governor Dayton. We appreciate you being here. Next, we're going to ask Myron Franz to come and say a few words. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and good morning, members of the committee. My name is Myron Franz. I'm the Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota. And I want to thank Governor Dayton. It's always good to be with my former boss, mentor, and just all-around good friend. Thank you, Governor. It's a joy to be here working with him on this important mission, and I also want to thank Representative Bierman for his interest and support and work on this, on behalf of the university and on behalf of the state, frankly. I just want to be clear about a couple things as you all consider moving this legislation forward, and that is, first of all, the University of Minnesota supports House File 402's amendment that includes a specific provision for the University of Minnesota healthcare facilities. The term University of Minnesota healthcare facilities includes those hospitals on the U's East Bank and West Bank campuses that are currently licensed by the Minnesota Department of Health as MHealth Fairview University. These UMN healthcare facilities serve as the principal home for the university's public health mission of improving access to patient care, training of Minnesota's healthcare workforce, and clinical research to improve patient care. It is through these facilities that the University of Minnesota Medical School and other health sciences schools deliver on the commitment to this state of healthcare education, healthcare research, and healthcare service now and for generations to come. I'm proud to serve with my colleague and dear friend Dean Tolar at the University of Minnesota Medical School and the fabulous success that he has demonstrated as his as he's been leading this organization. The public health mission of the university is currently supported by the relationship the university has with our clinical partner, Fairview. As we have stated publicly before, the possibility that the University of Minnesota healthcare facilities will be controlled by an out-of-state entity that fails to support the university's mission is a public health crisis for this state to consider now. This legislation protects the University of Minnesota healthcare facilities from being controlled by an out-of-state entity in a manner inconsistent with the public health mission of Minnesota and the University of Minnesota. The university supports this legislation because it protects the important facilities in their dedication to the university's mission and gives the Attorney General, in consultation with the Minnesota Department of Health and the university, necessary time and information to assess whether a transaction involving an out-of-state entity could in fact serve the public health interests of Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Berman.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Franz. So with that, that concludes the testifiers on the bill. So we can go to member questions and discussion. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, frankly, just like in medical care, this bill is treating a symptom. You know, what, you know, a lot of symptoms are problematic and you need to treat them. But the underlying condition is more pervasive. And one of my questions about the amendment was trying to look at some of the underlying conditions. If you've got a disease, there are certain medications or certain treatments that aren't appropriate because it exacerbates an underlying condition. And I have concerns with that one additional section because sometimes components of that area cause some of the situations which force, I guess, the combining or joining together of entities. I'd love the former governor to let us know what your feelings are about the underlying situation and conditions that are causing so many medical facilities to have to merge or look at some option. And I think we need to address that. As to the subject of this bill, I want to make sure that we aren't exacerbating the issues that are causing the desire or need for the mergers, and that we have to fully look at what if the merger doesn't happen, what's going to happen, or probably is going to happen, you know, and weigh the pros and cons. We have no perfect solution, but sometimes doing nothing is better, and oftentimes doing nothing is worse. So that's the basis of my concerns, and I'm trying not to touch on subject matter because it's so complex. We shouldn't be fighting over that. We should be fighting over the mechanisms that are causing us to sit here this morning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Did you want to comment, Representative Bierman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Quam, for those thoughts on the issues. Very pertinent, and all of things, mentioning all kinds of things that have to be considered in this very complex area. And healthcare itself is very complex. You know, our former president, he made the comment recently, or when he was president, he said, healthcare is complicated. Who knew? We all know there's a complexity to it, and you know, you touch on some really important issues that are part of that equation. Specifically 9.1, I think we can all agree that labor units are not by itself what's causing the healthcare conundrum and issues we're facing in this country. I think the fragmentized system we have and the complexity of it, I think, is best revealed more fully in that report I cited, Shorter Lives, Poorer Health. If you take a look at that, there's a section on infrastructure and how hospitals and health centers are created in this country and how they are run and what those impacts are for all of us as consumers, as patients. So it is by itself a very complex nature. Why are so many merging across the country? That's what we're seeing. Consolidation, we've been seeing that since the 80s. You know, in my businesses, consolidation happened. A lot of things went offshore. Some things stayed in the country, but consolidation happened, and that's kind of a nature of business. They want to grow and get bigger. It's certainly the case with hospital mergers. And I would say from what I've seen in the studies and, you know, looking at this pretty hard the last months, most mergers that happen don't have to happen. They're happening because a larger hospital wants to get even bigger and are shooting to just expand and grow. And it's often driven by, you know, the C-suite in the hospital system wanting to grow. Certainly there are hospitals that have issues, that have other underlying problems that, you know, need help and assistance in some way. And that's the area where we, I think, as a state, especially with all of the, you know, rural areas where we need, you know, more hospital services, not less, which is what's happening with consolidation. They're taking services away. People are having to drive farther. That's certainly happening in this area. But so why are hospitals merging? I mean, that's a good question and deserves fuller study, and one that this bill would help address so that we as a committee could hear more about that.
All right. Brief follow-up, Representative
Cole. Just a quick one. In education, we've seen a lot of mergers. And because of scale, being able to help rarer cases, more you know, special ed and some other cases, I would hope that this committee could look at something similar to special education districts, of where you have instead of a full merger, you have a cooperative activity between several small entities to be able to, you know, share resources across, and that being creative, we can find the solution. I hope this bill could be improved on that. But as we're working on this bill, we need to look at the big picture. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering if Mr. Franz would stand for a question.
If he would come back to the table. Go ahead, Representative DeBrindley.
Thank you. I'm wondering if we can just get an update. You gave an update more broadly, but I'm wondering if we can just get an update on the conversations, the discussions between the university and Fairview and Sanford.
Madam Chair, how long do you have?
let's see, 2 minutes, Representative, or Mr. France.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. Part of the issue, I want to make sure that I'm respectful of the dialogue, the nature of the dialogue that we have in those conversations, because by the nature of those, we have to maintain some confidentiality to work through this that will ultimately obviously be made public. So we're in ongoing negotiations with Fairview and Sanford about their proposed transaction. As you know, we've been concerned about the fact that the letter of intent that was originally crafted between Fairview and Sanford was done without the involvement and knowledge of the University of Minnesota. And so we've been working with them to prepare what we think is the right sort of combination that might work in the state of Minnesota. But it underscores a lot of what you've heard Representative Bierman talk about today, and that is to make sure that there's a public health component to any transaction. What's happened is two entities have been negotiating over valid business concerns about Fairview financial situation and Sanford's business willingness to enter this market, but that left out the discussion of the public aspect. And so what we've been engaging in these discussions is a really strong desire on our part to show that what if there was going to be any merger that would take place, it would make sure that the University of Minnesota facilities would be under the control of the university, and that going forward, the university would be in a better position to negotiate a much more favorable community health care system that would supplement and be engaged with the academic health center at the university. So those are ongoing discussions, and we're working diligently. They're complicated, as you know, but I guess that's about as much as I can say at this point. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So we're going to – do you have a short follow-up, Representative Brindley? And then we're going to one more member on the list, and then we're going to go to a vote.
Okay, well, since we're not going to have time to actually discuss it, then I will just make a comment. I did have a couple of more questions, but I will just make a comment instead. You know, regarding the questions earlier, we were told, Representative Bierman, you know, this language will deal with some of the issues with mergers. We were told that the current merger is a different issue. However, then we were told that this language does deal with the current merger. There's a lot of doublespeak on that. And then we're told that, you know, obviously, and I respect that the conversations that are happening need some level of confidentiality. It's hard to work in good faith without some level of trust and confidentiality. However, I hope that at least Representative Bierman is getting all of those perspectives, because for a confidential conversation and a confidential transactions that are taking place, we are dealing with them in a very public way here at the legislature, where I feel like as legislators probably don't have all of the information that is lending itself to the crafting of this bill. I would just point out that right now Fairview has no control over the University of Minnesota Medical School. That's part of the agreement. Fairview has owned these buildings for decades now. And so the University of Minnesota does not currently own these buildings. Fairview does. And frankly, the partnership agreement only goes until 2026. This entire agreement is only in existence for the next few years. And I'm sure, obviously, there would be renegotiation at that point. But the interference from the legislature is alarming. I feel like I said, clearly, as legislators, we do not have all of the information that is leading to pretty broad, sweeping legislation for future mergers, potentially, and certainly this merger. And we don't have the information, and yet we are making very big decisions. I think it's really crazy. This is bonkers. I would encourage everyone to vote no. And I would ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
All right. We will have a roll call. And I would just say before I go to Representative Bierman, and actually now we have another member on the list, but Representative New Brindley, we rarely have all the information here in the legislature to control the things we control and fund. I mean, let's just face it. We're a part-time legislature. We have limited staff. And that's kind of the nature of the beast, unfortunately. You know?
Madam Chair.
I will go to Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Brindley, New Brindley, for your comments on, you know, what you've said. I just do want to clarify that when I speak about this bill, I don't make the Sanford-Fairview merger the center of it, because this is something that is going to be going forward, and there's a lot that we don't know, that I don't know personally, about the situation there, the negotiations, the legalities of it all. So I don't think it's my place to interject or speak too much about that. I would like to turn it over to Mr. Franz one more time, just to have a comment on his thoughts on those comments as well.
Right, Mr. Franz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to make one thing really, really clear, Representative, and that is that under the current proposed merger, if allowed to go through, would result in the transfer of governance from the Fairview system to the Sanford system. So our concern has been from the very beginning is to make sure that that does not happen. And any proposed merger that may or may not occur under the supervision of the Attorney General, of the legislature, and the governor would be very public, but we want to make sure that that merger, as contemplated and as proposed by Fairview and Sanford, doesn't happen, because the merger could happen tomorrow. There's nothing legally preventing the merger as designed from happening tomorrow. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I've got this understood right, because the way I'm looking at it, it is part of the agreement. So under subsection 5, it says that the Attorney General can bring action to enjoin or seek other equitable relief. That's the deal with labor agreements. So the Attorney General, because that's under 9.1, the new part that was just added, that part talks about the bargaining agreements, and it's under subsection 5. So it is part of that deal. And I'm just wondering if that's true or false.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the section on enforcement where we have the enjoining issue, that is separate in to me, as far as it is not one issue that is going to those factors. Again, I'll read it. Factors informing whether a transaction is contrary to the public interest include, but are not limited to, whether the transaction, and then we go to line 9.1, the transaction will have a negative impact on wages, collective bargaining units, collective bargaining agreements. So this is one item to consider. But I think, you know, I can bring the Attorney General's Assistant Attorney General up to comment on this, and maybe that would be helpful. But I think that is it is a factor to consider in the broader merger deal, but it is not the sole thing that they would focus on necessarily.
All right. I'm going to ask Ms. Conti to come down, and if you would please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members, Erin Conti from the Attorney General's Office. Representative Murphy, so there are three reasons within this bill that the Attorney General can go and try to pursue an injunction or some sort of other remedy. So it's when these transactions would violate nonprofit laws, when these transactions would monopolize, or when the transaction would be contrary to the public interest. So the labor agreements are one of a series of factors that inform whether a transaction is in the public interest. The provision, both the amended version and its prior incarnation, do not contemplate the Attorney General going and taking one of these discrete factors and pursuing an injunction or a reversal of a particular criterion. It's this comprehensive, contrary to the public interest standard that needs to be met in pursuit of a remedy.
And Ms. Conti, and just to clarify too, isn't it true that it's a court that makes the ultimate decision? The bill authorizes the Attorney General to go to court, but ultimately the decision belongs to the court.
That is correct, Madam Chair. This is all, when can the Attorney General bring a case, and what criteria would need to be satisfied?
Thank you. Representative Murphy?
Thank you.
All right. And finally, Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with a previous speaker that this is treating a symptom and maybe not the underlying problem, but symptoms do need to be treated. But I think it's worth saying that the overall disease is that we have profit mixed up in our healthcare system. We heard, or we were part of, that public testimony about this merger, and we're hearing about spreadsheets instead of patients, people who are in need of care in healthcare facilities, talking about moving into markets instead of talking about cities of people living where there are car accidents and they need emergency care, or people are growing older and need potentially hospice care. It's completely inappropriate the way that we are forced to talk about healthcare in the current system that we have. But this is a very, very good fixing of a symptom, or at least helping fix that system. What we're doing in this bill is giving tools to the people's lawyer, who they voted on to represent them in court, to be able to look at the public interest in a very important, in any case, of an important merger, and be able to represent the people and say this is not in their public good. I cannot fathom voting against this. I absolutely support, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And I'm just, I'll make a comment and then I'll just go to Representative Bierman for a final comment before we take the vote. But I think the key issue here in the change that we're doing today from the previous version is to really call out and recognize the importance of the University of Minnesota and the devastating impact, as was testified to, that this merger could have if it went forward and these assets were placed under the control of an out-of-state entity. And I think we are all here, in fact, as representatives, to protect and forward the public interest. And it is so critically important in this arena where we're talking about the University of Minnesota, that is, they're a land-grant institution, has a special constitutional existence in our state, and is so critical, as Governor Dayton told us, to our state and its future. So I really appreciate, once again, Representative Bierman's hard work in this and the wonderful testifiers that we had. It's really wonderful to have Governor Dayton here today. I regret that Governor Pawlenty was not able to make it. Appreciate his involvement in this as well. As Governor Dayton said, it's pretty unusual to have two former governors from opposite parties coming together to advocate on an issue. And that just really shows you how important this issue really is. So really appreciate that. Appreciate Myron Franz being here today. And Representative Bierman, to you to close before we vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the good discussion. I, too, am happy that we had the opportunity to raise this part of this bill up a little bit more regarding the University of Minnesota. I think with all the issues this legislature has been facing this year, this one has been a little under the radar, so this helps to raise that up, and I will pursue further conversations with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, because I think public interest and the common good of health care for all of our citizens is something we can all get behind. And I too want to thank former Governor Dayton for being here today, sir. Thank you so much. Appreciate your attendance and your comments today. Thank you very much.
All right. And it occurs to me, too, Representative Bierman, I should just make a comment on the issue about the appropriation before we vote on the bill. So this bill will move separately, but it is the fiscal part of it is carried in the omnibus bill. So when it goes to Ways and Means, this piece will be filled in. So that's kind of why it's still a blank, but that will be taken care of in Ways and Means. So with that, Representative Bierman renews his motion to re-refer House File 402 as amended by the DE5 to the Committee on Ways and Means. So with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Excuse me. Schumacher, no. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Backer. Excused. Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Bonner, aye. Representative Carroll.
Aye.
Carroll, aye. Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Aye.
Hemmingson-Yeager, aye. Representative Hurd. Excused. Representative Keel. Excused. Representative Murphy.
No, appreciate it.
Murphy, no. Representative Nadeau. Excused. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Perryman.
No.
Perryman, no. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam, no. Representative Ryer.
Aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Smith.
Aye.
Smith, aye. 10 ayes and 5 nays.
There being 10 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Bierman. And so there being no other business before us today, we stand adjourned.